You're like a chameleon. I've got you in short hair. I've got you with long hair. What's it going to be, Al?
It's midway. It's a ponytail right now.
In your headshot, you have short hair. So is it tied back for the headshot, or is it?
Oh no! In the headshot, it's a it's just an old shot. It's pre-COVID. I've had a new photo shoot, but we haven't picked the new photos to go out yet. But I'm totally committed to 80s metal hair at this point.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's absolutely. Yeah. And now, when you're on stage, do you wear it out like that?
Sometimes it depends on how physical I'm planning. You know what I mean? Right now, yes. There might be a point where I go like half and half, where I, do the upper part and leave the bottom to hang, near mullet,
Do you have a favorite 80s band that you love? Because we're the same age. So I think we could park on one of many outrageous moments.
Strictly 80s or bands that kind of, came into their own. Because I'm a huge Kiss fan. So but I also love the makeup and non-makeup years, 70s right. to 80s and then back again. I had the pleasure of singing on stage with Kip Winger on the Monsters of Rock cruise just about a week ago.
How about that?
That was pretty awesome. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. He gets a lot of grief, but I've always loved his music, and he's a virtuoso too, by the
yes.
way.
Yes. I'm actually going to go down and see he's debuting a symphony at the Nashville Symphony Orchestra that he wrote in a couple of weeks. I'm actually going to fly down and see the debut of it, which is really exciting. And I've always had a theory that Winger is a prog rock band masquerading as hair metal, because if you listen to the time signatures and the, the song structure, it's incredibly complicated. It's not, it's much closer to like Rush and Dream Theater than it is to Rat all practical purposes, like White Lion or something like that.
Sure.
It's way more complicated. Try playing 17 on guitar in time. Just try it. I lay that challenge to anyone. Try it.
I know very little about music. I know time signatures 4/4, 3/4, 2/4. So, and I know that like John Bonham would play in two different times sometimes.
Totally.
Remarkable.
Oh, they drop a 5/6 on a turnaround or something. Just make a one beat totally disappear in a turnaround, which if you try to count the song out as you're doing it along, there's a stop. Oh, wait, you're off by one now. Right. That's how they used to trick you. Rush is well known for like using multiple time signatures and switching styles, even going to reggae and then back into, like 4/4 or 3/4 time and 6/8 and whatnot. And Winger, the band, does the same thing. They do that stuff all the time. And it's really complicated. As musicians, they're amazing. So, and these guys are all in Alice Cooper's band, the original three members of Winger Alice Cooper's band, and effectively started writing their own songs, largely because touring with Alice, it was not work. It was so easy because his music is pretty on the nose musically.
Sure.
So, yeah. So they wrote the entire Winger album, I think, in a hotel room on tour because they were just kind of like, you got some time? Let's write some stuff in like 9 different time signatures that actually hit slaps, So anyways, so I go Winger, White Lion, the White Lion Pride album. I have so much sort of associated positive memories with. And in the non-rock world, I would say, Peter Gabriel and Genesis, I know some fans consider that a permanent fight, but I never considered them close because I like the band starting in the 80s.
Sure.
Before that, I had no interest. So from the Yellow album on, that was Genesis to me, and Peter Gabriel's So
right on.
And the like was, yeah.
No, that's really cool. When I see stories about like when Eddie Vedder and Motley Crue are fighting, I don't like that because I like both those groups.
Sure. Yeah. And the funny thing is like, ironically enough, like Pearl Jam is not grunge. They came up in the grunge era, but let's be completely honest. Pearl Jam's first record, 10, it is mixed like Pink Floyd. It is one of the most pristine, expensive sounding records you will ever hear. Listen to it again. it does not sound like, because the only grunge band that was genuinely out at that time would be Soundgarden. That's where somebody just overmodulated the amps on a microphone. Everybody else was just making pop metal and pop rock. Even Alice in Chains. Alice in Chains is a Sabbath style hard rock band. And if you listen to the sonic quality of it, it doesn't sound like, there's nothing grungy about it. It just doesn't, it's not a hard cut in the style of guitar playing. But I, you know, I would consider those two different styles of music that it wouldn't necessarily overlap. You know what I mean?
Right.
And you know, Eddie's a funky dude. He lives in Seattle still, drives a murdered out Volvo station wagon. That's his car. He lives down the street from an old agent of mine who retired up there. And he sees them, you know, him all the time at the same ice cream shop and that kind of stuff. It's just not that world. And criticizing the world of hair metal or metal in general, if you're not in that world, is kind of bad form in and of itself. It's a form of musical snobbery, because it's a little bit like slamming on NASCAR or those kind of things. Like if you don't go or enjoy it or know it at all, it's snobbish.
Fair enough.
And that was my problem with Eddie digging. He's like, oh, those bands didn't mean anything. I'm like, well, all their, you know, most of their lead singers are still alive. And if they died, it was out of pleasure. It wasn't because they did themselves in. So as far as Positrax go, when you choose a music style, you're better off for longevity choosing 80s hair metal than you are 90s grunge.
Yeah, kind of grunge. Part of me, the showbiz side wants them to tour together. I mean, it'd be so weird, you know?
Right.
I mean, you know, that would be...
I think Soundgarden and the hair metal bands could tour in the same way that, you know, some kind of like look at mid 80s Ozzy. Ozzy was a crisscross of Black Sabbath, you know, his period with Black Sabbath and the Jakey Lee hard rock guitar playing that really made, you know, that was right up there with anything that any of the quote unquote that Rat and all those guys were putting out at the time, style wise. And it fits very nicely. It works. Bark at the Moon and you know, Shot in the Dark, those kind of songs. That's very 80s. And yet it still it doesn't cut against what he did in the 70s. It fits very nicely. So you're absolutely right. I think they absolutely could do it. They won't though, because you know what? Because Pearl Jam they're trying to be the new Fish. And Fish was trying to be the new Grateful Dead. You know, they've got a career path, which is get all the ayahuasca stoners to follow them city to city, right? You know, you can make fun of Kiss fans, but that's the Fish, Pearl Jam, Grateful Dead stuff. That's straight up cult.
Right.
That's like, we're like the Manson family. We're just too lazy to kill.
Sure.
It's the same mentality.
Hal, we've got you in town for a long time. My gosh,
yeah.
Like a Wednesday to Saturday in West Michigan.
I know.
Los Angeles to the cloudy middle market joy of the various Full House comedy venues. Holland,
right.
Michigan on Wednesday night at the Park Theater, which is a great old joint, great old room. The listening room is a brand new place in Grand Rapids. You're going to love
excited.
That. Have you ever been to West Michigan, Hal?
Yeah. I mean, I've been coming to Grand Rapids the entire time when there was basically one comedy club in town and it was a death trap. You're familiar with the, you know, three bars, comedy club at the top,
yep.
And staircases all the way down. So basically drink your way up the stairs and
well, it's funny you say that because that has happened where people were at the top and fell down the thing.
You know how I found that out? The very first time I performed there, I made an obvious observational joke to me that seems like a dangerous concept. And I was unaware that somebody had, you know, landed on their neck, you know, or whatever, 2 weeks prior. Nice. And then everybody's like, oh, and I was like, and then somebody later was like, that really happened. I'm like, of course it really happened, you moron. That's what I was trying to tell you about. This is a terrible idea.
Funny because that building is now closed. Like a month ago. So,
well, yeah, I mean, ultimately, was it the one to survive COVID? I don't think so. You know what I mean? Of all the places Yeah. Like you couldn't even separate the bars in it because they were all connected by floors. It was like the anti-social distancing place, which means, of course, that it will open again triumphantly in a couple of years.
Yes.
After the current unpleasantness, and turn it back into the minor VD cesspool that I'm sure it was, followed by, you know, alcoholic accidents and slippery floors. Yeah. The dream will survive.
Hal, I spent a good portion of my show today talking about the State of the Union. I don't know if you were traveling, but did you get a chance to check it out?
Yeah, I watched it. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. And then I caught a plane afterwards.
I kind of want Kamala Harris to stand up and just walk. And she probably shocked the shit out of Joe Biden and just say, let me do it. Can I do it? I mean, seriously, because I have this suspicion that she is. And I'm actually OK with that. I don't care. But I feel bad because I feel like he should be like relaxing or something like that. I get the impression that he's super tired.
It's like the guy who does the job and who can sell the job, and that we've had a lot of guys who can sell the job. We've had very few guys lately who can do the job. And in George W. Bush, for example, like it was so obvious that Cheney was driving the bus. And yet he was a young enough guy where you're like, he's the guy I want to have a beer with. He talked just as much garbage, but he did not have age and a lifelong stutter as an excuse.
Correct.
Biden, on the other hand, has been around long enough. And I love the fact that, you know, like he brought up the fund the police thing. They were going to run against him and Kamala Harris as being too hard on crime, if you'll recall. When the primary started happening and it looked like they were the top, the Trump campaign was like, aha, we're going to run on there. You know, they're going to try it. Everybody's screaming defund the police on their side, and we'll subvert them with their own voters by bringing up the crime bill. And literally, like, Biden takes office and is like, can we take a look at that crime bill thing you wrote again? Because that actually might be kind of sweet right now. You know, so Biden is, I think, the guy who can do the job, even if he doesn't sell the job. And Robert Gates, everybody uses that Robert Gates thing about Biden's been on the wrong side of every decision, you know, whatever. Well, Robert Gates is on the side to stay in Afghanistan for another decade. Robert Gates, if he says that about you, you're doing something right. And you know, Biden was the one who was like, don't do the surge, get out. We're not fixing this. This is not, the Afghan government is not going to stand on its own. And Trump ran on, if you'll recall, getting us out of Afghanistan. I know more about the ISIS than the generals. I know this, right? He ran on it. I'm going to get us out of Afghanistan. Obama's been promising it for 8 years. And Biden was telling Obama the entire time, like, the generals are going to tell you 5 more months every 5 months. Just stop it. It'll suck, but just move on. And what happened was he got into office and he was like, but the general started telling him the same thing they told Trump, which kept us in all 4 years. What changed? What changed in Afghanistan the 4 years Trump was president? What stabilized? What great advance did the Afghan government make that made it viable at all? Day one to his last day in office, nothing.
So essentially, it didn't matter when it happened. What happened had to happen.
Yes. Yes, there was no way it wasn't going to be ugly. That's why nobody did it. Everybody was being told, look, if we leave, it's going to collapse. They know it. The Afghan government is not going to stand on its own. The minute we announce we're leaving, they're going to head for the door. It's just going to be terrible. And Biden came in and went, yeah, I know. That's what you guys have been telling us for 8 years. No, I'm leaving. And he did. And the crush at the airport is Trump's fault. I'm just going to say it. The crush at the airport is Trump's fault, 100%, because he did none of the work getting the embassy staff out. He did none of the work getting the SIV people out.
Yeah,
none of the families. Nope. None of them.
Wouldn't it have been a good idea to put it off a month and prepare all this?
No, you couldn't. They did. They pushed it 3 months. That's all the Taliban was going to give them. And that point on, they were going to start shooting soldiers again. That broke the deal. We broke Trump's deal, which he did none of the homework on. He did none of it. He set a date, remember, in May. End of May, we're out. And he did none of the extraction work. He didn't set us up for anybody to leave. He didn't get any of the embassy staff out. He didn't get, and he could have, it was COVID. He could have used COVID as an excuse to get everyone out. Sorry, we can't, our contractors can't even train you guys because we can't be near you. So bye. We could have gotten everyone out in 2020.
So, Hal, what does it feel like to be talking to a guy who voted for Trump and has since turned on him?
Well, everyone wakes up eventually to their mistakes. Yeah, it's silly. Yeah, and here's the thing. Unfortunately, most of the stuff that he was selling, like strong border, blah, 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 all the stuff that kind of appealed to some people that were like, okay, finally, was A, stuff the Obama administration and largely Clinton even, and Bush, I guess, to some extent, had been working on for a long time. Like comprehensive immigration reform, that there's a bill that will lock the border down, create a visa program for migrant workers so they can come and go, but they go back home. They don't stay for months and then have to work under the table for 6 months and then end up having to live here because trying to get back in would be a nightmare. So you just let them come and go, like in El Paso. They just drive in, work, go home. That's what, like, Hillary was talking about when we need an open border. That's what she's talking about those migrant workers, not in general. Right. Those people, borders open, you come over, then you go back to Mexico where your house is. That bill would pass today, and they're teeing it up. They're going to vote for it in the next 2 months. I think they're holding it to some degree to benefit them in the midterms, but it's been on the stack for a while. And if it's one of those things where, just like the infrastructure bill, could have passed during Trump. But he wouldn't put it up. You know why he wouldn't put it up? You know why he wouldn't put either one of those on the floor? Because he would get Democrats voting for it. And he had to look like a win-win for himself the entire time. And that's just absurd. That election was his to lose. Because all he had to do was go, COVID's gonna suck. I'm the perfect guy to guide the economy back, batten down the hatches. It might be months, but I'm the guy. I'm a wartime disease president. And he could have, and people would have gone, okay, like they did with George W. Bush, who was a complete moron, but we didn't change horses midstream because of Iraq, Afghanistan, right?
Right.
Could have done the same thing. But to do that, he would have had to be a totally different person because he's been a screw up his whole life. All he does is screw up. He screwed up his dad's company. The year he wrote Art of the Deal, he lost more money in New York real estate the year he wrote or had ghostwritten Art of the Deal. The Apprentice was on a fade. His run was to boost the ratings again. His dad handed him that company. He borrowed $56 million from his brother and his sister's nest egg from their trust fund that they got from their dad to keep the lights on at Trump, at the Trump organization. They're a branding company. They haven't built anything since 1990, since his dad was alive. They don't build anything. They stopped. It's a label.
Hal, let me ask you this. You're very
Other than
upfront.
That, I have no opinion.
No, you're very upfront with the audience, and I appreciate that because I think that what that allows, that sets an expectation, and it gets it. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of the times I've encountered people in various forms of media, whether it be internet-based material or on the radio or TV, people, it's the elephant in the room. It's the one thing that the world is talking about, and they don't talk about it. And I've always been like, well, fuck it. I'm just going to say whatever the fuck I want and they can pick up the pieces when it comes to that. Right. And I think that that is starting to become more and more of the norm because people can smell bullshit a mile away when someone's not talking about the important shit.
Yes, I agree.
Hey, friends, it's your pal EZ with my latest and greatest marketing partner, Mint Mobile. I know a lot of you have been through the ringer when it comes to costs with big wireless. As you know, what you see is never what you get. You ever have that happen where you get in there and you're like, okay, they're like, you're going to get this, this, and this, and this, and then you pay us this. And you go, oh, yeah. And then, like, you get the bill and you're like, what the hell just happened? It's like bait and switch. And then you call in and you realize that you're screwed. So you're like, oh, my God, I might as well just keep overpaying for this. Never again. Enter Mint Mobile. You never have to worry about the gotchas ever again. When Mint Mobile says $15 a month, when you purchase a 3-month plan, they mean it. I've done this. You should too. Say bye-bye to the overpriced wireless plans, jaw-dropping monthly bills, and unexpected overages. Mint Mobile is here to the rescue with premium wireless plans starting at $15 a month. My God! To get this new customer offer and your new three-month premium wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/Zane. mintmobile.com/Zane. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month and give the other guys the big heave-ho. mintmobile.com/Zane. All right, fine print time. $45 upfront payment required. That's equivalent to the $15 a month. New customers on first three-month plan only. Speeds slower above 40 gigs on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
But I do think that a lot of people mistake like hyper bullshitting for truth. Like what he's saying is so off like the reservation that it must be true, because only a psychopath would make that up. That's what Trump skated on for a lot of times. And that's where everybody's in this anti-government paranoia about our own goddamn government right now. That's the sad thing, because the Russians, I'm of the opinion that the Soviet Union never really went away, that the 92 fallback was a rope-a-dope. And that's why Vladimir Putin was put in charge, because the idea is we can't fight him on the ground right now. So we got to pretend we're on the ropes for a couple of decades, and then we'll roundhouse them when they get soft. And that's effectively what the plan has been doing. And all this nonsense about NATO's been expanding. It's like, yeah, notice the NATO starts expanding every time you snuff somebody in a German park or steal an old part of the Soviet Union that broke away. No, this has been part of their strategy the whole time. The authoritarians of the world have been shit talking democracy for decades, and we have fallen for it. We have allowed ourselves to get sleepy about our respect for democracy and how dirty it is. And I like the argument. I think it's good. I think it's healthy when we disagree. We're not a divided country at all. America's not divided. America is a democracy of people with a lot of big ideas. That's going to sound like a clash, in the same way, by the way, that people go to a comedy club and get offended because jokes are being told. And you're like, no, this is a safe space for jokes. That's how this works. You don't go to a swingers party and start kicking dicks out of people's mouths because you don't like sex. It's none of your business. You don't go to a metal show when there's a mosh pit and go, oh my God, these people are fighting. Like, no. We do this here so we don't fight. You don't have the fight. It's when you don't have the argument. It's when you get too entrenched or people go, don't allow that person to speak at all, that instead of jokes being thrown around and a kind of jive back and forth debate going on, when you deny that, the tension gets ratcheted up so much that real fighting occurs.
Let me ask you this, Hal, because we have a kind of a different scenario in that the belligerent in the Ukraine thing can kill us all quickly. If Russia lobs a nuclear weapon, the gloves are off, right?
Well, here's the thing. There's tactical and ballistic nuclear weapons, and the ones that we concern ourselves with because we're way the fuck over here is the ballistic ones, the ones that will come across the ocean. Tactical is smaller, and the fear is that they're going to use these kind of things on Ukraine. I don't think that's going to happen. And I think there's a couple of reasons why not. One is the oligarchs themselves. And this is the same reason the CCP hasn't done it, because they would have done it a long time ago, too. The true believers among them are very dangerous, but they're cushioned by the liberal economy around them that helped them flourish in the first place. So the oligarchs, this is where greed, interpersonal greed, is saving us all to some degree, because these guys don't want their nests unfeathered in a nuclear blast right away. They don't want to, none of them have this illusion they'll be top of the pile. And the difference between sort of the madness of Putin and the madness of Hitler, for example, which is, similar, but there's a very distinct difference between these two guys, in that Hitler viewed it a form of Germanic perfection as the goal overall. And so wiping out everyone else on Earth except his own people had this kind of intrinsic value, right? It was, you could have other people you could work with, but we're going to run the place forever. And if you die, you die. Russia, however, is not, like, Putin does not have that feeling about the Russian genetics. He does not feel that way. He's more of an authoritarian control person, what he would view as kind of Dr. Evil running the whole world with all the people in it. Well, you can't nuke that into shape. It's different than that, you know, the version. The person who's closer to that is actually Xi Jinping, who's a Han supremacist. He believes in the superiority of the Han Chinese people and that all the other Chinese people who are not Han descendants can die. And that's scary. That's why the Uyghur Muslim, that's why concentration camps happen there and not in Russia. Russia just puts down their political opponents to keep their control.
Right.
China is eliminating large swaths of human beings. They have much more in line with that. And both of them are scary for those for and have to be handled differently. So
tell you what, Hal.
Yeah. Other than that, I have no opinion.
Hal, you know your shit. I mean, you make me in a good way. You make me feel dumb as fuck. I mean,
I have some good news. I'll cheer you up a little bit. And this is sort of China was supposed to outpace our. Remember, China was going to eat our lunch. We've heard that phrase forever. That became a hack phrase. China's going to eat our lunch, right?
Heard
that for a long time. Because they're so far advanced over what we're doing, and they make computers and stuff. Well, first of all, they don't. Stuff is assembled in China. It's not made in China. That's why they chose made, because it sounds like they created it. When it really is just assembled, stuff's put together. The chips that are used, for example, are made in Taiwan, South Korea, or in the United States. We have factories in Cupertino and in Arizona specifically that make chips, and then they get shipped over, and then they get slapped in a clean room into a phone. A piece of glass from South Korea gets slapped over top of it, voila, iPhone. But it's not made in China. And all of the technology is from the United States, all the advances. All those new innovations are come from the United States, specifically a chunk of California, but and Seattle. These are two major areas where the entire world's technological industry hinges. And if anything happened to them, the world would fall into a new dark age, and everybody knows it. So we are a bit safe because of that in and of itself. Now, the problem is the reason China was able to do this is because they had a lot of people for a long time. They got 1.3 billion people, right? That's what we've always said. They're going to eat our lunch. They got all these people. Okay, first of all, it is cheaper to have an iPhone assembled in Mexico now than it is in China because of the cost of wages there. The other thing is they don't have nearly the number of people that they've been telling people they have. They have been undercounting in their census by 150 million minimum in the 18 to 34 range during a time when they had a one-child policy. The thought was for a while that the demographics of China was that they were going to lose half their people by 2100. That got moved up to 2050. They now think it's 2035. The population of China peaked 8 years ago and is going to be cut in half in 15 years, half a billion people gone from Earth in the next 15 years. And the same thing is true of Russia. The demographics of Russia look like Trump's penis. It looks like a tiny mushroom. The base of it is empty. And one of the reasons why Russia is needing to do this, like gain this ground in Ukraine and kind of try to seize this temporarily, is because in 10 years, they're going to have half the number of soldiers.
Okay.
They don't have 18-year-olds. You know who does? Us. The United States, Mexico, and Mexico specifically, Canada to a lesser extent. I don't know why, but according to Peter Zion, they forgot how to have sex in 1972. So they've been tapering as well. The demographics of the world, we've hit peak populace on Earth. And it's going down everywhere. And the only place that's going to have a consumer economy with any strength to it over the next 25 years is the United States of America. And you know where we're going to move our factories to that we don't want to have in the United States, where most of them will be? Mexico. We're going to have a porous, functioning relationship with Mexico because it'll have a young consumer-based factory working economy with a lot of young workers. It's the only place on earth that are like that, that are growing like that.
Hell, how do you find time to gather all of this information? I'm really intrigued with your vastness and the depth that you've been able to show. That's fucking great, Hal. Jesus.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, I'm always suspicious of narratives. I don't necessarily glom onto them when there seems to be a phrase about something that catches the zeitgeist and sticks, especially as big about something like I think I became suspicious when that whole, we need government so small we can drown it in a bathtub, that whole thing. Like, we need small government. Like, we have the biggest economy on earth. America has a $29 trillion economy. Okay. GDP, $29 trillion, the biggest in the world by a lot, like by factors of five. We also have the biggest military in the world. We have, we are the dominant currency. We are the reserve currency of the earth. And you want a skeleton crew running that? Are you out of your mind? You know who wants that? You know who wants a skeleton crew government in the United States? Vladimir Putin.
There you go.
Xi Jinping. The Iranian mullahs, the Saudis, they do. You know why? Because you can roll over 10 guys, but rolling over 1,500 is really hard. And so that BS has been sold to the American people since the mid-90s by the Alex Joneses of the world and the Ralph Naders of the world at the same clip on both ends of this like bizarre spectrum. And they're all uniquely and incredibly full of shit. I'll go even further with this. America needs a big functioning government that pays attention because we have more freedoms than anybody else. And when you have more freedoms, you actually need more guideposts. Just like if you have more roads, you need more road signs. If you only got one road in town, do you even need a stop sign? No. But if you've got an interconnected highway system, you sure as shit do, right? That's because you got a lot of people doing a lot of things in a lot of different ways. And not all of them are illegal just because they're different from the main. So that's why we have 10 different versions of murder. Where, you know where they got a very simple version of murder? Iran. That's the thing. We should never fear complexity because we benefit from it. We exist because of complexity. Democracy is complexity. You know what the New World Order is? An alliance of democracies. That's what it is. It's been, I mean, when have you heard the New World Order spoken of in decent terms ever in your life? It's always been a spooky word to scare the world. You know what it is? It's the opposite of the old world order. Ask yourself what was the old world order? Think about it for a second. Theocracies, monarchies, and dictatorships murdering cannon fodder on a weekly basis. Serfdom. That's what the old world order was. The new world order is, you got a democracy, we got a democracy, we may be different, but we agree that our people should be able to pick their leaders, right? Okay, in picking our leaders, we have agreements and disagreements between countries. We ought to line these things up because some of us share a border, some of us don't. It's adulthood.
Hal, this is all fantastic. It has nothing to do with my stand-up, by the way. I was going to say, that I can only, now watch, this is probably harder for you to do than your stand-up. Okay, then you probably go to do your stand-up to relax because this seems, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, this is, you know, my dad's an architect, my mom's a nurse, and both of them infused in me a love of reading my whole life. And so, and a brutal awareness that people can be full of shit. And so that, and if comedy is anything, it's a bullshit detector, you know, but in a nice way. Anybody can scream bullshit. Anybody can just point at something and say bullshit. But you won't necessarily convince somebody who believes the bullshit if you're just yelling at them. And that's social, like, highly complex human systems work that way. If there's a bunch of people, we're all going down a road, and that's life, and we're all on the road of life, and a bunch of people get caught in a cul-de-sac of nutty, stupid ideas. If you go yell at them, you're in a cul-de-sac, you morons. Get out of the cul-de-sac, get on the road with the rest of us. They're going to go, fuck you. This isn't a cul-de-sac. This is where we live. This is the truth. You guys are going to a road to your doom. And they'll, you know what I mean? And they'll fight with you. But if you stand there, you go, we all get caught in cul-de-sacs sometimes. I've been caught in a cul-de-sac. Gary was in a cul-de-sac for years. if you want to see it, there's like 9 cul-de-sacs, trust me, down the road. If you want to take a peek at some of them, but if you guys want to come on out, yeah, come on. No, trust me. You're going to get a lot more of those people back on the road of life that way. And that's what comedy is for. The recognition that we can all fall for it. We can all be baited. We can all get a fish hook in our cheek. And the minute you think you can't, that's when the problems arise.
Hal, I want to touch on one more thing. And of course, I want everybody else to go check you out. You're in West Michigan from tonight, which is Wednesday. We're recording all the way till Saturday. And fullhousecomedy.com. You can get the tickets right there. Go see Hal Sparks. And off you go. But are you familiar with Who Are These Podcasts?
Who are? No.
Okay. That's a show I listen to, which features a lot of stuttering John moments.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
And they parked on a potential problem. Is there a rift between you and John?
No.
Okay. They
No, we were going to do some live shows and we had to reschedule them or something. And I think that's where people got that idea, but no.
Okay. Okay. I talked about it. They featured it. They said, is there something going on between Hal and John? They like to park on a lot of the things John says and make fun of him. And roast them.
I see. Gotcha. So they're really just looking for an in for another way to attack Stutter and John.
Correct.
Okay. Then that would be one of those situations like I've been talking about, which should draw your attention to the essential flaw in the argument being made, because it is a targeted, myopic argument meant to score certain points
in
a narrow field. So anything done under that guys under that theme should be seen as only that theme. It means they don't mean well. It doesn't, there's no good there. There's no upside to this. It's not like they were concerned because we want to heal things. We think people in the podcasting world get a lot like, no, they're just, they have a bone to pick with an individual and that's what they're going after, which in my world is what I would fundamentally call a waste of time. Do you have any idea how many things there are to learn and know about and experience and be aware of that ain't that?
Fair enough.
In answer to your question, that is precisely why I know all the shit I do, because I would never get caught up in the soap opera aspect of like my shows on YouTube. Infotainmentwars.com is where people go if they want to watch the live stream that I do. And occasionally I will see in the clips that I review and what I'm talking about, because I talk about politics a lot, that I will see like infighting between YouTubers, right? There's this weird catch between certain people from like, the Young Turks and Actual Justice Warrior and Vosh and all these people who are their own, they have their own little kingdoms, right? All over the internet that honest to God, I don't give a rat's ass about. I'm more of a topics guy. And when they start inner fighting, I'm like, oh, they've run out of things to say. That's what happens when you can no longer back your own argument and you can't refute theirs, or you guys don't actually argue right now. You're not differing on anything, but you can't be allowed to agree. Oh dear God, if you ever agreed on something, the world would collapse. So it becomes personal. So yeah, I don't care.
Hal at halsparks.com, H-A-L Sparks, S-P-A-R-K-S.com. You can see Hal's Patreon, links to all of his spots that he talked about. Mm-hmm. He talked about the infotainment. There's links to all this stuff, all at halsparks.com. Hal, is there anything else? I don't want to miss anything. Is that we've touched a lot of stuff here.
Yeah. I mean, I just want people to know that, and I know this will upset people, but the world is not going to end. I know people are counting on it. There's a lot of people, rapture ready folks out there, probably listen to you. The world's not going to end. It's going to keep rolling along. You're going to have to keep making more decisions about your diet and exercise and what job you're going to take and whether you're going to quit and what kind of relationship you're in. All that shit's never going to end until you do. It's not going to end before. Don't count on it being tapped out by a nuclear bomb or a deity. You have a lot of complex life ahead of you. I'm sorry to tell you this. I know everybody's like, man, if I could just live in a bunker eating, you know, baked beans for the next 10 years, it'd be so much simpler. It's not going to happen. Sorry. It's going to be, yeah.
I'm sorry. If you had to choose between Ron DeSantis or Donald Trump as the president of the United States, who would you want to be in the White House?
Oh, I mean, DeSantis. I mean, because he's actually got some governing experience. As much as he sucks, he knows what his failures are. And Trump, beyond even his last term, was his last term. He's not running again. He's a mess. He's on a hard fade. This is not even about whether or not he was a good executive or whether you liked what he did or not. But if everything he says about Biden being sleepy Joe and not being able to talk is true of Trump. I've covered every rally of his since lockdown. I've live streamed them and done commentary on all of them. And I've watched the decay happen in real time. And losing the election was, for a man his age and with his ego, physically damaging. It might as well have been a CTE hit in a football game. He has lost massive amounts of steps. He's a wreck. He speaks gibberish on a scale. I mean, you've seen action replays of Magnified Fortune and the last rally where he just kind of went, he lost track of the thing and somebody had to yell and he's like, kind of got embarrassed because I lost track of where I was. Meanwhile, you know, he's like, Sleepy Joe. And like he flubs a word in a teleprompter, you know, every so often. And it's not a big deal. He gets right back on track. He doesn't try to insist that the word he messed up is really the word he meant. Sure. Like I'm fine with that. And the same thing with DeSantis. Like I don't like his policies, but if the majority of people in this country pick him as the president, you know, because of a policy difference, that's up to me to convince people on my side of the aisle of a better way of getting our policies met, our policy needs met, as opposed to just somebody running on jingoistic, xenophobic psychosis and going, I just like the way he talks. He talks just like me. You know, that's what's great. Sure, he sure. says the same thing I do. Like, that's not enough. So DeSantis, obviously, I mean, as a governor who's done some stuff. So, yeah.
Hell,
I wouldn't vote for him. He's a terrible human being. And he's
sure.
He's
absolutely. Absolutely.
Crap. And by the way, there's tons of other Republican governors that aren't even getting will never get a shot
right.
at running because that's the choices the Republican Party is making right now. Really? That's the fallback guy. That is not Kasich, not anybody else who's, you know, who stood for the party before. Nah, just
yep.
either Trump or the dude from Florida, because he can guarantee a state. Right. We're Jeb Bushing it now.
Right.
Yeah.
Seems like it.
Yeah. It's all bad haircuts. Everybody who comes from Florida has a bad haircut. I don't know what it is.
I agree.
Republican politics. It's the strangest.
I definitely thing. Agree with that.
Yeah.
Hell, I tell you what, I really appreciate the time. You're going to have a great time here in West Michigan. I'm so glad that you're in town and I want everybody to go see you. Okay.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. I appreciate the conversation. I appreciate the frankness. It's a good time.
Indeed, buddy. The pleasure was all mine. Thank you, Hal.
Yeah. Cheers.
Bye-bye.